everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm very excited for this week's show because it is our annual rundown of the year so far, which means I am joined, as always, for this special episode by JB.
And this is a doubly special episode because, in the spirit of those old choose-your-own-adventure books from middle school, this is going to be so random and disconnected.
I like it.
Challenging our audience to play Pokety Poke with the little cursor on their computer and listen to this podcast in any order you want. Just jump around, because even if you listen to it straight through, it's going to be just like you're doing that anyway. So skippity hop and hoppity skip.
I'm excited. This is actually the last podcast that will air before we celebrate our 8th anniversary as a thing. May 14th, 2010, I believe, was the first podcast that was released.
Somewhere on my phone or my tablet, I have the picture that I either used on the Facebook machine or the Instagram machine or the Twitter machine. When we celebrated our 5th birthday,
yes,
it's me sitting at my desk with all the movie posters behind me, and I'm holding up my hand because we're 5.
Right.
And every so often I come upon that picture. Wait, let me rephrase that. Every so often that I see it in the various things, and it takes me a couple seconds. Why?
What is this?
Why am I waving to everyone with an open hand? Is someone throwing candy at me?
Why am I telling everyone I'm this many?
Like a zoo bear?
So we're going to talk about 2018 so far, leading into theoretically the summer movie season, even though it's
been
basically underway because Avengers Infinity War is making all of the money. Summer keeps creeping up. So it's already summer, but we're going to go ahead and talk about the year so far anyway. How would you characterize 2018 at this point?
In the spirit of our president, whenever the president does... No. Wait for the sentence to be over. When any U.S. president does the State of the Union, I'm here to tell you, Patrick, the state of the movie union is strong. And here's how I know.
Half of our audience just stood up. The other half is sitting down in protest.
Well, that's our country in a nutshell. Half of the people believe one thing, and the other half believe the exact opposite just as passionately. Magnets. Who knows how they work? So, I have a list here, because as Patrick knows, I love lists, listicles, and I love counting things. And I'm behind in my quota, because now that I have literally nothing else to do, the goal is to see 156 movies in a theater for the year, which would be 3 a week, which should make anyone happy. So I'm a little bit behind.
Okay.
But I'll catch up. So far this year, in a movie theater, I'm not counting video at home or the F This Movie Fest or the wonderful thing we did for your birthday. This is in a theater. So far this year, I've seen 36 films.
Okay.
Of the 36, 12 were older films, repertory screenings, Critics Classics at Elk Grove, TCM Fathom Events. So those are all terrific. We're not going to shit on those. So that leaves 24.
They need to just start running just middle-of-the-road movies as part of those series.
We were actually talking
about this month. It's Jagged Edge. What? I mean, okay, I guess. Right. Finally, I could see it on a big screen.
Wait, is Jagged... No, I'm confusing Jagged Edge with... Wait a minute.
The Cutting Edge?
No.
One is about ice skating. One is Glenn Close and Jeff Bridges.
Okay. And, yeah. And
Jagged Edge is the movie with...
No. I'm confusing it with the Rabbit in the Pot.
Fatal Attraction.
Right.
Yes. That they might actually show.
That I have only ever seen Jagged Edge once. But when it's a TCM Fathom event,
then
will go again.
Jagged Edge is a weird movie because it has a final shot that reveals the identity of the person.
I was just going to...
Where it's like, I'm not positive who that was.
I was just going to point that out. The only thing I remember of that film, I remember two things.
Okay.
One of them is unseemly. That in the film, Jeff Bridges boasts that he takes women out horseback riding, that it's a form of foreplay. At which point I go, ick! But at the end of the film, a ski mask is taken off a character. Watch how I can talk about this spoiler-free. Okay. And the angle of the camera and the angle of the person... Wait, is that...
Right.
And I couldn't be the only one who had that reaction.
Obviously, I did too.
But as much as 10 years ago, we were saying when different theaters started to stick their toe in the water of older films, that we dreaded... That, like, when you go to the Music Box, which is the repertory house by where we live, and it's the happiest place on earth, and they used to show everything under the sun, and there was a great variety of movies, that when all the theaters, when all the theaters went to digital, there was this fear we had that there would be 10 classic films that would just be, and so far that hasn't come true, but there, as you yourself pointed out last night, how many places are going to show Halloween in October to make a little extra cash? So I'm not counting repertory screenings.
Okay.
Of the 24 films I saw in a theater, I would enthusiastically recommend 12 of them.
Wow.
And that's batting 500.
Yeah.
And that's more than we can expect. Now, part of this is because I read and listen to F This Movie, I am often turned away from something in advance. But by the same token, I might not have seen Game Night if I hadn't read your review first.
Not mine. Adam Risky's.
My apologies. In my mind, you write everything on the site, including my columns.
It's because I've been attaching my name to all of them.
Read what Patrick has to say about It Came From Outer Space. My God. I'm still going to see Blockers because of your review, and that was your review.
Yes.
And the trailer for Tag has me cautiously optimistic because, A, I think that could be a good premise for a comedy. I've talked about this endlessly on the podcast. Because I'm such a big fan of It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, any movie that gives the characters a decent excuse to behave horribly,
right,
just to go nuts, I think it's good. And the fact that these guys have continued this. Also, you've seen the trailer, right?
I have.
The trailer actually has some jokes in it, some jokes that are funny.
Sure.
So I'm cautiously optimistic about this because,
like,
you know,
I like time as a construct.
I've been writing off comedies for the last 5 years that they've just become these things. So I'm cautiously optimistic. There's 12 out of 24 films that I would enthusiastically recommend. I think you might disagree. We have not talked about this yet.
All right.
But I know you saw it.
Okay.
Den of Thieves.
I saw it. I would not enthusiastically recommend it. I think there are people that I know that I would say, yeah, sure, watch it.
Okay.
Get it from the Redbox.
And
the
machine
that wrote and directed it.
I'm not enthusiastically recommending it the way I would, enthusiastically recommend Independence Day Resurgence. But, and I'm on record as saying the last 10 minutes are foolish, and they're from another film, and you don't need that.
Well, because
that.
It's 2 hours and 20 minutes of Heat, and then 10 minutes of The Usual Suspects.
Exactly. And that was just moronic. But does every film now that features a heist with assault weapons, are we going to just see it as another version of Heat? Or we reference Heat because Heat did it the best?
I think this one is very Heat.
Okay.
I don't think they all are. I think this one is.
At any point, I agree with you there. That's actually one of the things I liked about it when they show you Gerard Butler's lifestyle. And I've known some cops, and they're interesting people.
Okay.
Was there any part of it that you enjoyed?
Oh, yeah. No, it was super watchable.
Okay. I think my recommendation, and I'm not just curving my opinion now to curry favor with Patrick, is I thought as 2 hours of entertainment, Two hours of entertainment, not 2 hours and 20 minutes of entertainment. As 2 hours of entertainment, I thought it got the job done.
It was super watchable. Again, I rented it on Redbox as soon as I could, and it was exactly what I was in the mood for at the time. So I don't have any real complaints about it, just that I don't think it really elevated anything, and I thought it was pretty derivative, but whatever.
Then perhaps I'm so jaded that my recommendations are, it was so much better than it could have been.
Sure, yeah. And there's a sequence at the end where it's a shootout on a highway where all the cars are stuck in traffic. I thought that was really good.
But actually, I thought that was derivative
of Sicario.
And a similar sequence in To Live and Die in La La
Land. Oh, sure.
Which I believe one of our favorite little boutique labels is putting out on Blu-ray soon.
To Live and Die in L.A.?
Yeah.
Shout Factory already did.
Could.
There's already a Shout Select Blu-ray of that movie.
Did it come out recently?
2 years ago, maybe.
Okay.
It's been out for a little while.
Maybe I'm horribly confused. Yeah. I'm so happy that as time goes on, William Friedkin's entire career is getting reassessed. Because I remember when we saw Sorcerer at that. Oh, wasn't that?
That was the first Chicago Critics Festival. That was the closing night.
You guys watch the film. I'm going to go get some Eduardo's Pizza because I really miss Eduardo's Pizza. And then I'll be back to talk to you. And not to chew my cabbage twice, but I had seen it when I was 12. When I was, what's that word? I'm quirky. I'm an unusual child. And I go to the movies by myself. And I still remember the theater. And I still remember walking in. And I knew nothing about the film. Which was good, because apparently a lot of people went to see it thinking it was some sort of sequel to The Exorcist because of the word sorcerer. And at 12, I had never seen anything like that and was just blown away by it and was sort of aware of movie critics and newspapers and magazines and stuff. And I just could not understand why that film got lambasted the way it did. So it's great that Friedkin's career is getting reassess.
Can I just one quick aside? I was listening to the most recent episode of 80s All Over, and they got up to Blue Thunder, and there was a brief discussion of Roy Scheider. And Roy Scheider was one of these guys who I would see in movies as a kid, and I would just be like, well, that's that guy. Mm-hmm. And there was nothing about him that interested me as a kid. And now as an adult, I fucking love Roy Scheider, and I'm sort of angry at kid me. Gene Hackman's kind of the same way. We're like, for some reason, I didn't appreciate these actors when I was younger. And I don't know why. What was I looking for in actors, and what kept me away from them? Because as an adult, these are my favorites.
My thought would be, and this is just off the top of my head, but I think I'm right. Gene Hackman and Roy Scheider are both very adult actors. What they're doing is portraying an adult, and there's nothing in the performance.
When you said adult actors, I thought you meant they have sex on camera.
Well, except for that one they did when they were young because, you know, they needed the money.
The French Connection.
I won't discuss the title. But I think my entire life, because I'm a little older and I was seeing those films when I was a little older, that Roy Scheider really tragically got typecast. For a number of reasons. And then...
But as what? Like, what does he always play?
He's sharp. He's dependable. He's hard-edged. He's often a good guy with a lot of the bad guy. But I was going to say...
Sort of a less twitchy James Woods.
And
not a monster.
A much better actor than James Woods.
Sure.
What was it? Oh, one of the talk comedy shows last night showed a clip. It must have been the Daily Show that they made a made-for-TV movie about Giuliani in the wake of 9/11 when he was America's mayor, and James Woods played Giuliani.
Perfect.
That all that jazz comes out, and I'm a big fan of that film. And I think it's one of the greatest performances in all of musicals, but it was like, oh, he can do that.
Right.
And I hate to misuse an analogy, but I said this when I believe it was Joss Whedon's Much Ado About Nothing came out.
Yeah.
That you were seeing all, for the most part, TV actors who had all been typecast into TV niches. And you're watching this and you're like, oh, these are professional actors. And they can do a lot of things. They're just never allowed to.
Right.
So when you see him sing and dance in All That Jazz, which you need to see because it's out on Criteria, so it's been officially approved. It's just incredible. I mean, even if you look at it and say, well, it's too much of a postmodern musical. I don't like this element. I don't like this element. If you just look at his performance, it's just unbelievable.
All right.
It's unlike any other performance in any other musical.
I'm into it.
That's all I will say. Also, you just said something like, if I can just cut in here.
Yes.
That's the whole podcast.
We're skipping around. That's right.
It's true. The other day, we were at the show together, which doesn't happen a lot.
No.
Because Patrick has this thing about my odor. And, you know, if the movie's long, it's offensive. Mm. And we were at a Marcus Theater. And I think it's before the trailers, but don't bet on it. Of late, Marcus has this, well, I think it's charming. This little thing where the president of the company welcomes you to the theater. And it's sort of awkward and corny and geeky, and there's three or four variations of it. But I love it.
All right.
I love being welcomed to the theater by the guy who's the CEO. But here's the main reason I love it. One of the things he talked about in the most recent one is that besides $5 Tuesdays, which Marcus has, they are instituting Student Thursdays. So if you are a student, you get in cheap Thursday night, which tells me a bunch of things. Number one, I'm angry because student pricing used to be a thing all over.
Yeah.
In Blazing Saddles, when Hedley Lamarr tries to go to the theater, he tries to get in as a student.
That's right.
And shows a fake student ID, and the ticket takers give me a break. So that was before I was a student. And then when I was a student, there was no student pricing.
Right.
Now that there's no way I'm a student, they're bringing it back.
Mm.
But, and you teach a film class at a local community college.
I do.
Would you say that one of the reasons that young people don't go to the movies is that it's too expensive?
Sure.
And that if movie theaters had any brains, they would realize that even grammar school kids, but middle school, high school, and college, that's your audience in 10 years. And if you make some decisions that keeps them using their parents' Netflix password, you're done. You're
right.
Sunk. So anything we can do to get students back in the theaters, I think, is a good idea. Plus, you know me, sir.
I do.
I am not cheap.
No.
I'm not frugal.
No, you are not.
One might say I am profligate.
You are a generous man.
In my spending. But lately, maybe this is encroaching age. This is why I'm so excited about the student night. Because I have a lot more time on my hands to see movies, I can sort of be more selective.
Right.
And this has come up on the podcast before. I'm not a fan of the recliners. I don't like the recliners. And there's still a couple theaters that don't have them. So you have a choice of what theater to go to. Lately, it's been very difficult for me to justify going to one theater that we're all familiar with and spending $18 a ticket.
Yes.
And going to another theater that we're familiar with and spending $6 a ticket.
Understandably.
So if me.
Right.
If I'm starting to say.
Right.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's no parking fee there, but I go with my wife and we buy some treats and it's now $50 to go to the movies.
Right.
That's problematic. Although, I think I told you this, I've been to $5 Tuesday at Marcus.
It's crazy.
It's nuts. And I was there because the TCM Fathom event, poorly, was scheduled on Tuesday because usually it's on Wednesday. And it's crazy and it's a madhouse. But there was even something about the madhouse I liked because what I observed, it was a lot of families with a bunch of kids.
Right.
So I'd wait for $5 Tuesday, too.
Yeah, it's a weird thing because...
So that it's a $20 night and not a $100 night.
For years, I was so grouchy and just like, I don't like crowds. I'd rather go when it's not crowded. But then anytime I go and there is a crowd, I'm like, well, good. People are going to the movies. And I miss that. Because, again, for the first 5 to 10 years that we were going to the AMC, it was always like that. I mean, movies were constantly sold out. Just people everywhere. And now I'm nostalgic for it because it means people were going to the movies and people aren't anymore.
But this is where I think the chickens come home to roost, and I wish there was a solution, but I don't know what it is. We went to Marcus Addison to see Avengers Infinity War.
Yes.
And then a few days later, my wife and I went back to see Tully, which we'll talk about in a second.
Yep.
And between the two screenings, they had put hastily computer-printed signs on the front doors of the theater that said, more than our expected volume of patrons are coming to see Avengers. Please be patient.
Those were there the day we went to see it.
Oh, I didn't see it.
They were there, yeah.
So when they made these changes to the theaters and they replaced 110 seats with 30, I said, okay, I understand that the theater, that the movie will now be playing in 5 screens, but the minute it happened, I said, what happens when a movie comes out that everyone wants to see?
Mm-hmm.
Or will people just say, I'll wait, because the weekend Infinity War opened, I thought, oh, this is going to be madness, and I looked to the local sit-here-and-eat-overpriced-food theater. And sometimes I'll use that because that's convenient and nice. And every single premium seat for the first 7 days had sold out.
Wow.
So I'm not the only one who said I'm not going to sit there.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the possibility with some of the Marvel movies, I'm guessing with some of the Star Wars movies, mm-hmm. with whatever else comes down the pike that everyone wants to see, that in a way it's the theater's dream. There's more people who want to see this than we have seats for. But do you really want that? Because do you want people who don't normally go to the movies anyway, which I'm guessing, to be frustrated?
Right, to be turned away.
Because make no mistake, I want movie theaters to stay open.
I have a feeling in 10 years it's going to be this thing that's just, I mean, it's sort of already becoming this thing where it's like, it's just for those of us who do it as a hobby.
Or it's just for special movies.
Right.
So what we're looking at is Netflix and other streaming services will be it.
Yeah.
And going to the movies will be like people who collect vinyl.
Right.
That's, I mean, right. Really specifically.
Right.
Well, that makes me sad, because as I'm guessing most of our listeners would agree, there's nothing like seeing a movie in a...
It's just like the guy from Marcus says. I feel like my 9-year-old son is now picking up on my reaction to that, because he's almost rolling his eyes at it. I don't want to teach him bad habits, but it's funny that he kind of thinks that guy is a douche.
I love that guy. Greg, I don't remember his name. Greg, his last name is Marcus.
I think it's Greg Marcus.
The last one he did was with his father.
Oh, I don't know if I saw that one.
And that should have been, hey, thanks, Dad,
Is his father, like, real rude to him? Like, you're a disappointment.
No, although the premise of the little bit was...
I wanted to open nudie theaters.
Nudies, I tell you. Nudies. That's where the money is. There'll never be home video. It's a pipe dream. Actually, that's a film that they're showing at the nudie theater. It's called Pipe Dream. That
followed by The French Connection.
The trope was that Greg was in his father's seat.
Oh, but good one, Greg.
But what soured the whole thing was clearly Dad is getting on in years. And the evidence of this is he had no lines.
Oh.
Right? Plus...
the other seats were open. Dad has dementia.
Oh, literally. Because right, it's an empty theater.
You're in my seat! But Dad, you're in my seat!
There's a previous one where Greg plays the piano.
Oh, Jesus.
Which he does beautifully.
All right.
But it's like that scene in Frost Nixon. Okay. Where I cannot tell you how many times I've seen that film.
I've seen it once.
On cable.
Yeah.
In fact,
I liked it when
I
saw
it. In just a second, I'll tell you a Frost Nixon story.
Okay.
A short one. I tend to go on. There's a scene in Frost Nixon where we cut from David Frost's birthday party, which is this lavish soiree with celebrities. And Neil Diamond is singing a song that Gus Kahn, the songwriter, has changed the lyrics. So it's about David Frost. And they cut from that to Nixon's living room. And a few of his closest aides and relatives are sitting there for the evening while Richard Nixon plays the piano. And they're miserable. And even though he's quite good, it's clear that
right.
we're doing this to make Dad happy. So it was like this. I went to see Chappaquiddick. Have you seen it yet?
I have not.
Okay. So I saw Chappaquiddick. And at this point, if you think my voice just got a lot louder and clearer, there were some technical issues.
It might have.
Maybe those other guys go back and do it again. I'm incapable. Plus, choose your own adventure. Skip around and I'll be quiet again in a couple of minutes. So you have not seen Chappaquiddick?
No.
I was really impressed by it. Mm-hmm. Again, it's a smaller film that's full of ideas, and I thought it was just going to be exploitation. And it's really good. And that gentleman who I like, who I can never remember his name from, good Lord, the second Planet of the Apes film, and from...
Yeah. I know who you're talking about. No, I can't remember his name either.
The film that...
From Zero Dark Thirty.
There you go.
Yeah. Jason Clark.
He's really good, and there's a whole bunch of supporting performers that are really good, and it actually has something to say about politics and about family, and there's points. Bruce Dern is in it as Joseph Kennedy, the paterfamilias, and it at a few points, it sort of reaches a Shakespearean level of what is this that's really going on in terms of the family, and I really, really liked it a lot, and when... Ted Kennedy in the film has his accident. There's all this stuff that's going on where we could question why things happened the way they did, which is the bulk of the film. But when he finally goes to the sheriff's office, the first person he runs into accidentally is James Reston, who was then living on that island or visiting, and he just happened to be a writer for the New York Times. He later becomes editor of the New York Times. And I'm watching the film, and I'm like, James Reston. I've heard that name before. James Reston. And I filed it away. And a couple weeks later, I looked it up, and here's what I discovered. And isn't this why going to the movies is so much fun? James Reston is the name of... Oh, where's my brain? He just won Best Actor last year.
Gary Oldman?
Best Supporting Actor. Sam Rockwell.
Thank you. I was like, for what movie? I had already forgotten.
James Reston is the name of Gary... Sam Rockwell's character.
Okay.
In Frost Nixon.
Oh.
And I was like...
I forgot that he was in Frost
well,
Nixon.
Well, there's... Oh, no. He's so good in that.
I saw it once.
He's the one who really wants to nail Nixon.
Okay.
Does the extra research. And I was sitting there playing with this fact in my head and thinking, well, in terms of the time frame, there's no way it can be the same guy. And so this is what Wikipedia is for. In Chappaquiddick, the first reporter that Ted Kennedy runs into is James Reston, the father of the character
wow.
that Sam Rockwell plays in Frost Nixon. And
are we talking shared universe?
Well, in a way, because both films are about American politics.
Interesting.
It's the,
so the
it's,
shared universe
it's
the, is American history.
It's the dark politics shared universe. The dark politics shared universe. I think I've said this before, and since I was recommending it, I think I recommended it on a previous podcast during What Have You Seen Lately.
Yeah.
A couple people I know have gone to see it and have said, okay, it's not just you.
Yeah.
It's good. So good. I would recommend... Chappaquiddick, and I would recommend going on Student Thursday. Just watch out for Greg Marcus in the lobby because
right.
he'll talk your ear off. Do you want to come home? I play the piano. And it would be really interesting as an experiment to go on one of these student Thursdays, even though I'm not a student, to see if it's working.
Yeah.
Because one thing I think about the TCM Fathom event screenings is I tend to go in the afternoon and there's not many people there. It's me and a couple white heads because it's the afternoon. And I wonder if the evening shows are more populated. I wonder if TCM considers this a loss leader because it's advertising the cable channel.
Right, right.
If Fathom Events is saying, well, we have the technology, we want to keep it in use. I don't understand financially how they can keep doing them, but obviously they want to because this year they put out the year schedule in advance.
Right.
So I often think, especially when I see the weekly box office totals, are things happening in other states? No joke, that aren't happening in Illinois, the Chicagoland area. Am I just going at the perfect time where I'm not seeing, you know, I mean, we both knew that Infinity War was going to be right. a tsunami of right. money right. for a number of reasons, but there's other things where movies are making money where I don't understand how they are.
Sure.
Clearly I can't be at every screening at every theater. Yet.
You could try. I thought it was interesting that this may not be the first time that this has happened, but I just pulled up, you know, 2018 in film on Wikipedia. And the first thing on there is here are the top 10 grossers of the year so far. Black Panther, of course, still number one. Avengers Infinity War, number two, even though it's only been out for 2 weeks. The third film, Operation Red Sea. Did you see it?
No.
No. Number five, Detective Chinatown 2. Did you see it?
No.
Number eight, Monster Hunt 2. Did you see it?
No, but I saw the trailer.
Okay.
Because it looked really good.
I don't think these movies were released in the United States. And if they were, they were barely released.
Monster Hunt 2 was.
Okay.
Because the trailer was so good, it made me want to track down Monster Hunt and see it. I believe that's anime.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's worldwide gross, and that's another thing I've noticed. That
so, this is those are all Chinese productions.
Right. The theaters that I frequent are devoting more and more screens to specialized, and here I'm talking about Hindi
yes.
movies, and also...
More so than Chinese.
Yes. And also these sort of quasi-religious films.
Right.
But that thing, I can only imagine, I believe it was called...
Sure.
Which Dennis Quaid actually did some press for, and he's the dad, and it's based on a country western song.
Oh, yeah.
When that came out, no one was expecting it to do anything, and it made a lot of money.
It's almost always the story of these movies,
for
though.
The type of film that
right.
it is. Here's a question. Again, this is Choose Your Own Adventure.
Right.
We're just skipping
Jump
around. There was a film... Mm-hmm. That was released in the last 10 years, mm-hmm. maybe five.
All right.
Greg Kinnear was in it.
Yeah.
And the son in the film, the little boy,
the
dies.
Heaven is real. Yeah.
He dies.
Right.
And he goes to heaven.
Okay.
And he comes back.
It's based on a true story.
Yes. And that's my point. And he visited grandpa and
right.
all this other stuff.
Right.
Since that film came out.
Uh-huh.
The parents have come forward and said, it's a hoax. So shouldn't that film be destroyed?
They should just take it out of commission
because,
completely?
Or at least remove based on a true
sure.
story. Because, well. So you can lie, and this is going to just be academic. You can lie and make all this money
right.
and then say, well, really, if I have to be honest.
And again, we get back to half the country believes this thing and half the country believes the other thing. Because nobody went to see it because it was based on a true story. And those that might have done that still won't believe that it's not if you tell them it was a lie.
Well, I would imagine, and I certainly didn't see it, and neither did you.
I did not.
That you would go see it to... support this belief that you already have.
Correct.
And again, you can get into that whole documentary thing, which it's not a documentary, or the based on a true story thing, where you know, balls to that. It's right. a movie, right. and we're going to judge it on that basis. I just, something in my head for the last couple of weeks keeps going back to heaven is real.
As it should. This has been a weird year for me, movie-wise, because I think I've seen fewer movies theatrically than ever in years past.
Yes.
And some of that I just attribute to my life, making it very difficult for me to get to movies. And some of it I attribute to, and this may sound like bullshit, but there have been fewer movies released theatrically that have compelled me to make the time.
Oh, no. I see that in spades. I cannot tell you.
But I always, like, whenever I hear people say that, I always kind of call bullshit. Because I'm like, but if you love movies, well, you go to the movies, you know?
Would you say, young man, that I love movies?
I would say that.
Okay. I don't want to rehash the whole retirement thing here, because I think every time I talk about it, any person with a job is like, fuck you! Fuck you! But let's just say I have a lot of time on my hands. And I got to say, a lot of these screenings I've been to, it's okay.
Yeah.
Time for this, which leads to that great thing that Risky once said, that that at one point we both thought, he's the one who voiced the concern, but that we both were in this position where going to the movies was like an AA meeting.
Right.
And it didn't matter what the movie was. We have to go to a meeting.
Yeah.
Because we're trying to follow our program. In fact, I can tell you, because I'm holding...
There it is.
This list. Here are the movies
yes.
that I went to see.
Okay.
Because it's a Thursday afternoon, and I have to see a movie.
Yeah.
Den of Thieves.
Okay.
Hostels. Which I actually liked.
Okay. I didn't love it as much as you, perhaps.
Okay, Anna.
Go ahead.
Wait, did I just say I loved it?
No. I overstated.
Did you hate it?
No.
My son, who knows about these things, pointed out. His name is Rory.
Oh, Dazed and Confused?
Yeah.
Oh.
Cochran?
Shit. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Rory Cochran,
yeah.
In my son's opinion, gives the performance of the film.
Sure.
And certainly he has an interesting story arc, but until my son told me that, I never would right. have put that together, which I often equate with good acting because I like the actor to disappear in the role.
I like the photography, obviously, and a weird thing happened with Hostels where it came at a time when every movie I was watching, didn't matter what. Like, it started with weird horror and exploitation. And okay, that's on me. But then, no matter what I watched, there was some sort of like, oh, a baby gets murdered. Or just something awful. And then I think the first 10 minutes of... So I'm like, I'll put on Hostels. I had a screener for it. Thinking, like, it's a Western. It'll be classy. I put it on in the first 10 minutes. I'm like, Jesus Christ. I can't
and again,
this nightmare.
This is a tangent. Choose your own adventure. I'm going to remember we were talking about Hostels. Last night, Patrick and I were at the Music Box Theater, the happiest place on earth. And I got to tell you, this was a revelation.
Yeah.
Because I'm an old man, and you're a young strapping lad. And I honestly thought, for the decades I've known you,
yeah.
that you had a stronger stomach than I did.
Sometimes I do.
And revenge... has some things that are very difficult to watch.
Yes.
I'm not going to deny that. I'm not going to be that guy.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be the guy who brings a date to Cannibal Holocaust, for instance. but I was really enjoying it and enjoying the film's willingness to go that far, because a lot of films don't like to do that anymore. And Mr. Bromley, who was sitting two seats to my right, I kept looking over.
Yeah.
At you in what was obviously some form of distress.
Yeah, there were a couple scenes that were very hard for me to watch.
And I said,
very hard.
Could this actually come down to some weird definition of gore? That there's some other kind of gore that I can't take, but you can. But what was in Revenge last night, I dug it, man.
No, I dug it too, but yeah, there's certain kinds of gore or violence that I have a harder time with, and it's, again, it's usually when it's done right, because it's the sort of situation that perhaps I can put myself in, or just...
And that it's supposed to be disturbing, because yes, like, of course. Like you said, it's done right. If it's done wrong,
right.
It's presented as... Honestly, nonsense or comic book, or that it has no consequence.
Half of I think what was getting to me was the sound design.
Oh yeah,
good lord,
splippity splat. And I want to talk about this without spoiling anything. I think I can, because the first time I remember it happening was in Halloween 2. I love when there's so much blood that someone slips in
sure,
it and
yeah.
falls.
Yeah, yeah.
Now I've never actually walked on any surface that's literally covered with what might be a quarter inch of blood.
Please wait till the end of the podcast.
Oh, Jesus.
Choose wait. Your own adventure. Everyone immediately skips to the end.
What is that behind his back? But I know the blood would have to be fresh to be slip slidey away.
Right, right. Yeah.
Because as blood coagulates, right. It would actually get to,
sticky.
It would make it easier
right.
to walk.
Yes.
In any case, you would recommend Revenge.
100%.
Just really assured filmmaking.
And I mean, from the title card, I knew.
Right. And yeah. My one quibble was that it's certainly not covering any territory we've never been, but why should that be a qualm? Because, what is there, like 10 plots? And it being released now, it
yes.
certainly feeds into the zeitgeist, because if you haven't seen, and you need to see it, there's a new trailer featuring people, well, it's not people, featuring men's reactions to the trailer on YouTube. And given what the film is about, which is revenge on some men who have acted abominably, these quotes are hilarious. And I applaud Neon Films for just, man, talk about, that's so clever.
It's great, and yes, and I love it put in that context, because it's a big fuck you, but at the same time, I just can't believe that still in 2018, there are men leaving those comments to a trailer on YouTube.
Well, clearly there are. And the other thing I really liked about the film, and I wanted to mention without spoiling it, is the lead man, what we might call the film's chief antagonist, really embodies in many ways his actions and especially his words this sort of toxic masculinity that should be repellent to us in the 21st century.
100%. And this is, it's all still cooking in my head, because I'm going to try to review it. The movie comes out Friday. If you're listening to this when the podcast comes out, it's going to be on Shudder later this year. I thought it was coming to Shudder much sooner. I was wrong. So see it if you can. I don't believe it's getting a VOD release, so it's probably something that you will have to seek out. So this is still sort of cooking in my brain, but I would argue that yes, 100% to what you're saying about the lead man. I think each of the men represents a different...
Oh, you bet.
Yeah. Kind of.
And all three are full of surprises, because another thing I really liked, without spoiling it, is the friend who's a little chubby. If you've seen it, you know who I'm talking about. We think he's one type of person.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a scene where he's revealed to be quite a different type of person.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that. Even the other friend, the one who's in the final shot of the trailer, that's really funny. We think one thing of him, and then as the film goes along, we learn something else. So back to Hostels.
Yes.
I went to Hostels because it was a Thursday afternoon.
Sure.
And I want to go to the movies. And I would say the same thing about Game Night, although I went to that because of your recommendation.
Adam Risky's recommendation.
I'm sorry?
I really want to see Game Night, because
I'm
hearing really good things.
Of learning.
And I'm waiting until it's a Redbox.
We've said this about a lot. I can't believe you use Redbox.
Yeah, sometimes.
I should start using Redbox.
Well, I'm cheap, so it's $7 to rent on Amazon or $2 to rent at Redbox. So this to save why, the $5, I'll
this
stop.
This is why there are long lines at the Redbox, yeah. at the Walgreens by our house,
yeah.
every Friday and Saturday night.
Yeah.
I went to Pacific Rim Uprising because I wanted to
Pacific
see...
Pacific Rim.
A specific rim, not the rim you're
way,
thinking of.
Did that... I mean... I almost feel like you saw it, and I feel like somebody would have to remind you that that movie was made.
Yes.
It's the number 10 highest grossing film globally this year. Now, well, of course, all that money comes from overseas, but like the landscape has changed so much that a movie like Pacific Rim can barely make a blip here and still make a shit ton of money overseas.
And the appeal of the film is undeniable. It's really what got me to go.
Right.
It's robots fighting monsters. And then it's a Wednesday, and I had been cautioned against it, but I need a movie, and I go see Death Wish. And then it's a Thursday afternoon, and I need a movie. And even though I had read your review on that one, I go see Rampage.
And?
You have covered this, but Rampage is so bad.
Thank you.
In so many different ways.
Thank God.
That I had a question for you. And this really gets to the heart of how miserably awful the film is. Because I prefer to see the film... because I prefer to see the glasses half full. Some of the stuff... And this is a very small percentage of the film. Don't go see the film. Some of the stuff where The Rock talks to the gorilla,
uh-huh.
I kind of liked.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. They have this relationship, and what if something had been done with that?
Right.
But nothing is done with
right.
that.
Right. But that's the best stuff in the movie.
I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, because I think about The Rock what you think of Tom Cruise.
Which is what?
Say what you want.
Yeah.
He's not yet phoning it in.
Right.
He's there
he's
for
trying
it.
To make yeah. the thing succeed. Yes.
And he's so likable. So, at the end of the film, this might be spoilers for the three of you left who want to see Rampage. I'm warning you. At the end of the film, The Rock is introducing this young lady,
mm-hmm.
and the ape is wrapping his head around this idea,
mm-hmm.
and The Rock is saying, she now is family. She is one of our group. And the ape... makes a very crude symbol
right.
with his hands,
right.
which involves making one hand into a mm-hmm. tube mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. inserting your finger in. And
right.
it's the third grade hand sign for intercourse.
Right.
What were they thinking? It's just, it's what, especially given the movie that comes before, what?
But actually, it's almost in keeping with the movie that came before it because I took, again, my 9-year-old son,
this
Charlie.
This is my question.
To see the movie.
Because I know you saw it with him.
And because he goes to your house and he plays the game and he loves the game.
And we play the game together because the game is fun.
Right.
Excuse me, Rampage producers, where's the Scum Soda storyline that explains? No, because that's... Oh, that's too silly? You couldn't include it in this shit fest you made?
It's pretty easy to make a movie out of that game.
Well, it's, like, you know, it's... you get big monsters and they attack. What was your son's reaction to that?
Well, he didn't understand that. But in general, because
thank
again,
God.
We were, yeah, well,
I,
sure.
I'm sitting there in the movie.
Right.
And at the end, I'm like, what
well,
the
Well, I
hell?
Leaned over to him and I said, that means fucking.
You
so,
did
no,
not.
I didn't. But, you know, we're coming off of Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, which also starred The Rock, which was I think, the first movie that my son turned to me afterwards and said, I loved that. And so he's a fan of The Rock, and he plays Rampage, and it seemed like a no-brainer. But I felt like quite often in the movie, it was inappropriate to bring him. I thought it was very violent at times, like... and like mean-spirited in its violence, not like, hey, fun movie Independence Day
violence.
Right, exactly. It was like, no, people are going to get torn apart and eaten, and here's a blood spray in this movie that also is this goofy thing about my... whatever, fuck that movie so hard.
He told me that he liked it.
Yeah.
And you brought up Jumanji, which I'm so happy that he saw, because after weeks and weeks of hemming and hawing, I went to see Jumanji. And
very entertaining.
It's what we want a kid's movie to be,
yeah,
because it doesn't have stupid pee-pee and poo-poo jokes. But also, and I don't mean to get on a soapbox, the film talks about what it means to be a friend, what it means to have courage. Mm-hmm. And these are things that we want to put in children's entertainment.
It's one of those movies that works for a lot of different groups, which is why it was so insane. I mean, that movie came out of nowhere and was, I just heard a statistic about this, Sony's highest grossing, no, but it was a sequel, right? I mean, it made so much money. It made so much. I can't remember the statistic.
Well,
if
you think of it from a marketing standpoint, a lot of us in one generation have a lot of affection for the original film.
I have zero affection for the original film. And when that trailer came out, I was like, why the fuck are they remaking Jumanji?
Why do you have zero affection for the
original
film?
I don't know. It's fine. Like, it never did anything for me.
I really like it.
No, that's good.
I wrote a column about it when it came out in 4K.
I remember. Other stuff you went to see because it was Wednesday or Thursday.
That's it.
That's
like
it.
I said,
okay.
I think the state of the movie union is good. Obviously, the first part of the year was catching up on stuff that didn't get to us for a while. And you saw Professor Marston and the Wonder Women, right?
I did, yeah.
What did you think of it?
I thought it was interesting. I thought it tried. I thought it wanted to be something that it didn't totally succeed at.
Agreed.
But I appreciated some of what it was trying to do. I am still not sold on, what's his name? The lead. I'm blanking on everyone's name tonight.
Yeah.
No One Lives. It's the same actor. And people love him. And he was in High Rise. And I thought he was pretty good in High Rise. But
and I think I'm remembering him in something else.
Well, you, of course, remember him from Dracula Untold, when he was cast as Dracula. Luke Evans is the actor's name.
Actually, when I was watching it, I thought it was someone else.
And he was fine in the movie. You know, I could see another...
Joke. When I was watching it with my lovely wife,
yeah,
I thought it was the guy from X-Men with the visor.
Ah, James Marsden. Perhaps you were just confusing it with the title.
Maybe, no.
Professor Marsden.
Maybe I thought it was James Reston, and there's a conspiracy theory. Choose your own adventure.
Shared universe. I'm a big, big, big Rebecca Hall fan, so that got me through it. I liked it. I liked it enough.
I thought the film's reach exceeded its grasp,
sure,
but I love anything, and maybe it's because there's this book out that everyone should read called The 10-Cent Plague. Anything that goes into when comic books start getting censored for various reasons, I find very intriguing. Here's a film I feel sorry for.
Okay.
Ready Player One.
Yeah, let's talk about that. That's one of the big movies of the year so far.
I was very reticent to see it because a family member last Thanksgiving was talking it up. And he had read the book, and he's got the trailer on his phone, and he's literally going from person to person at Thanksgiving. He's showing people the trailer. And he said, Steven Spielberg's directing it. And I didn't know that. And I like Steven Spielberg. So I go, and it wasn't at all what I thought it was going to be. So I don't know if that's brilliant marketing or a fault in the marketing. But I liked it. I thought it was good. I thought it was an interesting story. I thought it was this crazy attempt to really sort of make a video game movie that was unlike other video game movies. And apparently Spielberg's participation got a whole bunch of the intellectual property owners on board.
Sure.
Although I have since learned, much to my wife's chagrin, that in the book, the second adventure is based on Blade Runner. And they couldn't get the rights. Because even though it's Warner Brothers, the makers of 2049 were afraid it was going to step on their thunder. It. And so we cast about for another Warner Brothers property and we choose The Shining. But I thought it was serviceable. Any movie that shows us a car race where suddenly King Kong shows up.
And they're driving, I believe, the Back to the Future DeLorean.
Yes.
Being chased by King Kong.
I'm on board. And my fear was that, and I've talked about this weirdness, that sometimes there are some modern films that are edited beyond my visual acuity, and I was afraid that would be the case, but it's not the case. But I feel sorry for Ready Player One, because 10 years ago, 15 years ago, it would have been a much bigger deal. And it seems like Ready Player One comes out, and I'm guessing it was some sort of success.
I believe so.
But it is now swept into the dustbin by Avengers Infinity War, and it will largely be forgotten.
Yes and no. I mean, you know, it's hard to tell because movies find a life.
True.
Now, maybe not the way they used to, because everything is so sort of ephemeral now, where we stream it once and then it's gone and we're on to the next thing. And but there will be people that watch it and connect with it, and perhaps it will lead them to some of the perhaps it will get someone to watch The Shining or Back to the Future.
That would be great.
Absolutely. It's a weird thing because I was not particularly interested in seeing it. I hadn't read the book. I was interested in it as the new Steven Spielberg movie. It's not that he does a bad job, and it's not that he's phoning it in, but it does feel like I'm trying to compare it to something. I mean, I remember even when he took the job to direct Jurassic Park, it was like, well, that's a no-brainer. And that's Spielberg just like, hey, I'm going to do this big populist thing because I can, and I can direct this thing in my sleep. And isn't this a marriage that just makes sense? And yet, I think he elevates Jurassic Park to something that is great. Like, I think Jurassic Park is so, so good. Ready Player One seems to be, you know, I know he loves video games. I know he loves nostalgia. So I'm sure there was a lot in this that he connected to. Sure, I want to direct that. It'll be a fun little exercise for me. It's not that I think it's a bad movie. It just, I could not connect to 1 second of it.
It's a busy movie, and I love how as time goes by, even though at the time I don't think it was disputed, Jurassic Park, the first one, just gets better and better.
Yes.
And more people have love and affection for it.
Well, because again, think about the Jurassic Park type movies, the big summer blockbuster movies that have come out since, some of them even with, you know, the word Jurassic in the title. and the more of those that come out, the more we realize how great Jurassic Park is.
And I've told the story before. I still remember the screening when my lovely wife and I went. And as a measure of how effective that film is, I swear to you, about halfway through, I leaned over and said, I'm really glad those things are extinct. I actually said that out loud to my wife. We've talked about this on the podcast, and I know you brought this up because apparently there was some sort of article written about it that one aspect of Ready Player One that I didn't like is what we have come to call the horrors of previz.
Yeah.
That clearly, because of the nature of the narrative, Ready Player One is a film that's been pre-visualized to death. And something I noticed in the end credits of Avengers Infinity War, there's one company that does a lot of previz. 13th Floor?
Okay, yeah.
And it made me wonder if really my problem with CGI, which is it all kind of looks the same, is not the real quibble. It's this all looks like it was prevised by the 13th floor. So that might be part of the problem. Also, in the wake of the film, there was an article written by a film critic that I actually like very much and trust, where the film critic in question, I believe it was Dana Stevens, said that her objection to the film was that all of the gatekeepers to the prize were male, that it's a very male-centric movie. And that took me by surprise because there's other aspects of the film that seem to be trying to play some games with gender roles. I don't want to give that away and spoil it, but that was her.
They're kind of throwaways, though. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it does. It feels like a movie made by fanboys for fanboys.
And about halfway through, and I don't think this is original to me, although I'm not sure if I read it before the film, its resemblance to Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory really started, oh, Okay. That's an interesting take on this.
I didn't think the story was particularly interesting. I thought the voiceover was disastrous. I thought... I just never liked the aesthetic of the movie, mm-hmm. which was part of, I think, what kept me away from it early on when the trailers were coming out, was just, I don't like how that looks. I don't think it had anything to say about the amount of nostalgia that it throws to get. It's nostalgia porn, but it has nothing to say about it, really, I don't think. Why it only comes from the 1980s doesn't seem to really be addressed, with the exception of, you know, there's a few, King Kong, okay.
Also...
But even the music is 80s music.
The big question that the film could have wrestled with for some, you know, ideological content is, the film suggests that playing these games, and playing a lot of them, is a really good thing to do.
Well, that was my next point, was it lands in a place, and I don't want to spoil it, but there's a line of dialogue that is so tossed away near the end of the film, might be the last line, that tries to say, like, oh, maybe we shouldn't always play. But, like, no, too late, because... Oh, yeah. Everything you've shown is that this is what everybody likes to do. No one's talking to each other. Everyone exists in the oasis, and we're good with that.
It's like after a 2-hour commercial for casino gambling, right. You can be, I mean, literally in the film, the richest man on earth.
Right.
Gambling problem? Call this number. Oh, we're set. We're fine. My conscience is clear. Right. We posted the phone number for people who have a problem with gambling.
So for me, it was just one of those Spielberg misses in kind of a big way, where it's just, I get why he made it, but it just did nothing for me.
I agree with you about the look of the film. I was so happy that I could understand it in terms of its algorithms. I was entertained by it while it was... going.
Did you see it in 3D?
My eyes. No.
There was so much of it that seemed designed for 3D.
No.
And I wonder if that's because Spielberg hasn't done much 3D, right? Except for maybe Tintin? Has he done anything else 3D?
Not that I can think. I mean, and here I'm talking about, I'm discounting post-conversions.
Right. I know he did, he tried to put Lincoln in 3D, and that got squashed pretty early. But.
Well, there was the sequence where we follow the bullet as it...
Jesus. I will say...
Choose your own adventure.
So there's two big movies that we don't totally need to talk about Black Panther, because obviously this is one of the movies that I think will define this year.
Yes, much like Chappaquiddick, and maybe I'm just applying the same brush of... the lens. Oh boy, talk about a mixed metaphor. I'm using a brush and it's a lens, and now he's lost his mind. That there were a couple aspects of Black Panther that I thought were Shakespearean.
Mm-hmm.
Just about
absolutely.
The line of succession and the duties of a leader. And that's the thing I liked about it the most.
Yeah, it's such a weird thing that I feel like we're getting to a point, and I'm not saying this as a criticism necessarily, but where you can only compare these movies to other Marvel movies.
Yes.
You can't evaluate them, and this is very true of Infinity War, and we'll talk about that in just a second. You can't evaluate them against other movies. It's just almost no point. Like, I can't really compare Ready Player One. Well, maybe Ready Player One is a bad example, but Black Panther to something else. So I could talk about it in terms of being a Marvel movie, and what I liked about it was the design and the performances. I thought the cast was great. I thought there were amazing sequences and ideas that you're talking about. But there's all this stuff. So the things that I like about it are the ways that it was different from other Marvel movies. And then the things that I don't like about it were the ways that it fell short in the same way that so many of the Marvel movies do.
And I agree with you 100% because I used to compare summer blockbusters to amusement park rides, that they weren't standard movies, they're not narratives, it's an experience that you're paying to take a ride. But I don't think amusement park ride is the analogy for Marvel movies. And I agree, for whatever reason, I don't go to them, think of them quite as movies, that maybe it's as simple as it's a comic book, or, as my wife suggested earlier today, it's a movie serial.
Right.
Each chapter is longer than in the 50s, but you weren't even expected to remember one chapter to the next of those old movie serials, because each one began with, if you remember from last week.
Right.
Clearly, they've built up a stable of characters that are interesting and people really like them and they want to follow them. I don't know. I never would have thought that the Marvel Universe would have spawned, what is this, the 19th?
I believe 18th, maybe. I think Ant-Man might be the 19th.
That's a that's a long run. I mean, how many James Bond films are there?
24. Right.
And Marvel did it in 10 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I have to assume pretty soon we're going to get more than two a year with the amount of money that they're making.
Oh, yes.
What did you think of Infinity War?
Well, here's what I'll tell you.
Without spoiling anything,
and
obviously.
I certainly, and I don't want to piss on any parade, because everyone loves it, and I'm not, I thought it was very entertaining. After I saw it, I began to think about what the achievement of it was. Because when's the last time, other than Mad World, you've seen a film with 24 main characters?
Right.
If you can imagine what a shit show that would have been, or could have been, and it's not. So I thought the storytelling was very good. I thought the pairing off of the characters was very canny. I thought that was very well done. But, and here's where we reach the point where, is this a movie?
Right.
I later read a lengthy article from our friend Film Crit Hulk, who takes these movies very, very seriously, and when they're good, he loves them, where he suggested, and I only half agree with him, but I think he gets close to my only quibble, that because he was a fan of the comic books, look at the nom de plume he uses, he thought that the movies, being self-contained two-hour narratives, would have finally triumphed over what he thought the weak spot of comic books were. Because you had to do the comic book month in and month out, and this could go on for years,
right.
Nothing is permanent.
Right.
Everything can be reversed.
Right.
You make up a time slip or a something, and then everything goes back the way it was.
Right.
And he thought that because the Marvel Universe had created a set of characters that people really liked and wanted to follow, that the movies, I don't want to say stakes, because that's thrown around too much, and I don't think that's the right word for it.
Right.
His problem with Infinity War was that nothing seemed to matter in terms of events in the film changing the characters. Because clearly we can all guess what's going to happen in the next one. And he thinks part of the definition of drama is that events happen during the course of the story that change the characters. But the Marvel people have no interest in the characters changing substantially because they want to keep this going.
Yeah, but I wouldn't. I don't even agree with that necessarily. And I don't disagree with what he says about Infinity War. And I have to keep reminding myself that, like, the model is changing and that we are in the middle of seeing Marvel do something to the thing that we love most that isn't the thing that we love most. And we're like, but that's not what we love. We like a movie that's 2 hours and has a beginning and a middle and an end, and the characters change and the drama is resolved and we get some sort of emotional catharsis out of it. And there's really none of that to be found in Infinity War. And the reason for that, I really genuinely believe, is because it's half a movie. And so, as a movie-going experience, we don't achieve the catharsis that we're looking for, and we don't see the characters change in this movie, and because what we saw was 2.5 hours of setup.
And a lot of people were really shaken up by it.
Sure.
Because they're used to what you're talking about. But
I think the second movie, and maybe I'm projecting or guessing something wrong, I think we will see characters change based on things that happen in this movie.
That is what I would like to see. Although, and my lovely wife, who is both smarter than me and liked, I would say loved, Infinity War more than me,
kept countering most of my objections to it as, I feel a little used to sit through what you just termed half a movie, mm-hmm. because the company that made it has the cynical expectation yeah. that we'll all be back in 2 years. To which my wife responds, of course, that's their job.
Sure.
To make movies that make money, that sure. put asses in the seats. So this is a triumph. When we were watching it, I thought it was one step removed from the famous, at the end of Back to the Future Part
yeah,
2,
yeah, yeah.
see you in the summer, suckers.
Right. But let me ask you this, and I don't mean to cheapen it by comparing it. And I'm not trying to defend Infinity War. I'm literally trying to wrap my head around this because there have been so many conversations about it. So I'm thinking out loud. I'm not trying to cheapen it by comparing it to a television miniseries. But when something was a miniseries event growing up, did you ever say, God, it's so cynical for them to spread this out over 2 nights?
No, but first of all, that was because I was 12.
Sure.
And wasn't as savvy. And clearly, as I just previously said earlier, in the Choose Your Own Adventure, go back. I have nothing else to do. I'll be there in 2 years for this film.
I just think you could make the argument that it's not just, well, hey, we can charge them for admission twice, even though, sure, it's that, right? But it's also the story that we want to tell is so big and so overstuffed, we can't do it in 2.5 hours.
If the plan is to do what you're saying, my God, would I give them credit.
I genuinely think it is.
If this really disturbing thing leads to something other than what I'm imagining, I would give them a lot of credit. The other thing I liked about it, clearly I disagree with Thanos, but
mm-hmm.
he does have a point. I disagree with his right. way of solving it, but...
At least it's an ethos, man.
No, because so many of these movies...
Oh, the villains, I want ultimate power. What? For what? Why?
It's Pinky and the Brain.
Right.
What we do every night, try right. to take over the world.
Right.
That I give that a lot of credit. And
right.
again, this is one of the few recent 2.5 hour movies, I think it's 2:40,
yeah.
that didn't feel like it.
Yeah.
Because, again, I've been doing the podcast for a long time. I think I've told this story before. When I went to see the Matthew Broderick Godzilla, which is, what, 2, maybe 2:15?
Yeah,
know.
Yeah, yeah.
I swear to God, when I stood up, when it was over, blessedly over, I felt like I had been sitting for 18 hours.
Mm.
And how long ago was that movie? I was a younger man then.
It was 10 years. This is the 10th anniversary.
Oh, my God. So I give them a lot of credit. You know. I'm glad that children, because I like children, can see these movies and sort of have personal heroes, like mm-hmm. here's my favorite, mm-hmm. which I think is cool. Mm-hmm. And I would almost compare. I kept trying to compare the Marvel Cinematic Universe to Universal Monster Films, because going into Infinity War, I thought, this is going to be House of Frankenstein.
Right, right.
Infinity War is a far better film than House of Frankenstein.
Sure.
I'm just going to lay that out there. And when the Blu-ray comes out, for the first time ever, I'm expecting this to be on the cover of the Blu-ray. Avengers Infinity War is better than House of Frankenstein, JB, at this movie.
I don't know if it's because the more movies I see, the more I gravitate towards the stuff that I like. I don't know if this is a Doug original quote or if he took it from something he may have, but I remember he would often say things like, you don't change as you get older, you just become more so. And I've just become more so. So I
have heard that.
Okay.
And I agree with it.
Yeah.
There's a corollary to that quote. And for years, I tried to find what movie it's from, because it is from a movie,
mm-hmm.
maybe from a stage play. An older man is complaining and says, no one grows up anymore. They just stay jackasses their whole life. If you are listening to this podcast and you just chanced upon this quote, yeah, choose your own adventure. Right. This literally bothers me on a monthly basis because that's a great quote.
Yeah.
I would love to know the source. You know, and I should just type it into the wiki.
You would think that that would probably work. But so I continue to become more so, and I gravitate towards the things that I like more and more. And so I don't know if it's a function of me seeking these movies out or just that these movies are better now than...
These movies seek you out. Patrick, we're so good. We go through your eye holes and we go into your brain sponge and then through your arteries to your heart, which is all where all your love is contained. Patrick, you need to see us as the movies.
So is it that these movies are actually better than the Rampage? Yes, anything's better than Rampage. But like, as I'm skipping some of these movies that are playing theatrically in wide release and instead seeking out smaller, somewhat independent movies that are, you know, often available through VOD, and finding a lot to like in those. I mean, a lot of the movies that I've really liked this year have been genre movies. Low Life was a really good one. Imitation Girl was a really good one. Revenge is a really good one.
Your review of Low Life really made me want to see it. And I just saw an announcement for the Blu-ray. And the cover of the Blu-ray is very beautiful.
Okay.
It features your favorite character very prominently.
Yes. Oh my gosh, he's great. But the three other movies that I want to talk about, and we can make it fairly brief, are A Quiet Place, which is something of a phenomenon this year, because again, it's this small movie that came out of nowhere.
I forgot to put it on my list.
Okay.
And we saw it with you.
No, you hadn't seen it when we last did a podcast for Vacation. I believe you were waiting for Jan.
Oh, okay.
And so you hadn't seen it yet. So I don't even know what you think of it. But A Quiet Place is one of the better movies I've seen this year. Annihilation, one of the better movies I've seen this year.
Terrific. Annihilation is full of ideas, and it's worth going to see just for what it looks like.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
The Lynn Ramsey film, You Were Never Really Here.
Which I haven't seen yet.
Okay. Three of the best movies I've seen this year. Very sort of genre-leaning.
And I don't know how it got left off the list, but this actually means I'm one closer to my quota. I thought A Quiet Place was a masterpiece.
Okay.
For any number of reasons. And you're looking at a film that's in a very prescribed genre, but that plays by the rules, but has enough surprises so that you don't really know where it's going. All kinds of people on the internet with all these ridiculous quibbles. And I'm glad you're thinking about a movie and I'm glad you're thinking it through, but A, it is a movie, and B, look at the world. Why would they want to bring a kid into the world? Well, there's no monsters that I know of right now that are attracted to sound, but we could argue that right now the world's a pretty shitty place. One thing I know, people tend to have children. It happens, even maybe when they didn't necessarily. I mean, that seems to me to be such an odd criticism.
Yeah, it's a sticking point for a lot of people, which I don't understand. Because again, the alternative is, then why are we trying to survive?
Now, has he directed other stuff?
Yes.
Because this is not his first film.
Correct. He directed two smaller films. One was a David Foster Wallace adaptation, Brief Interviews with Hideous Men.
Oh,
that's not great. And then one was like a sort of quirky family drama that I don't even remember the title of.
Yeah, I vaguely remember this because I know that this was not his debut film, but the direction... I mean, as much as I liked him on The Office and stuff, and the direction is so beautifully assured.
Yeah.
I would easily say that that's going to make my top 10. And especially if you listen to this podcast, I'm guessing you're a fan of horror films, and it's just head and shoulders.
It's a good one.
Oh. Cool. Now, if people are choosing their own adventure,
ooh, yes,
and they just skip to this place,
right?
Patrick, we have to be very quiet. In fact, I'm trying to be so quiet. I turned my microphone off for the first time. So no, don't laugh. Don't laugh. Sorry. Don't laugh. They're going to take...
the monster. Oh, no. Great. All right. Anyway, I guess that's going to bring us to the end of the podcast because JB has just been eaten by a monster. So I thank you very much for listening to
us. One more thing.
Oh, wait, there it is.
I'm not really... I haven't really been eaten. It's a choose-your-own-adventure. It's all crazy make-em-up. Three quick things.
Skits and bits.
Skits and bits. Slowly but surely, Night of the Lepus is about to be released on Blu-ray.
Yes, it is.
I can't believe this is happening.
Yeah.
You all need to buy it.
Okay.
Two, even though Video Watchdog is now defunct, and that's very sad, because that was my favorite film magazine, and I have such amount of affection for Tim Lucas, he still does a blog that every couple weeks I check in, and I'm amazed by what he's writing about. I found this fascinating. There was a film that was considered lost. It was a sexploitation film called, I believe, Orgy at Lil's Place.
Mm.
And it was considered a lost film. And then our friends at Vinegar Syndrome found a copy in the most unlikely place, the Kinsey Institute of Delving into Sex, had an archive of sexual material spanning decades. And it turned out the Kinsey Institute had a print. Who'd have thought? But Kinsey was reticent to lend it because, I don't know, maybe their print is of questionable legality. There were legal issues. So, Vinegar Syndrome has put out a film called The Pickup, about which I know nothing. And to skirt the contractual issues, Orgy at Lil's Place. Yeah. Is a boat, so we're not actually selling.
That's how Orgy at Lil's Universal Place was able to put out Terror in the Isles.
That's
all
right.
Those years ago.
And according to Lucas, what's interesting about the film is not the sexy sex, but that it contains lots of documentary footage that's very beautiful to look at of New York at a certain era.
Era.
And so I've purchased it. I haven't watched it yet, but all of these crazy things intrigue me. Also, Warner Archive has released Gun Crazy on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And
that's a great one.
You got to love Gun Crazy. But what's really interesting is, and maybe for the same reason we were talking about before, but probably not, there's this documentary I'm a fan of called Film Noir, Bringing the Darkness to Light. And it makes its high definition debut as a bonus feature on Gun Crazy.
Very cool. Now I might have to upgrade my DVD.
I used to show that every year in film study class because even though it's a little long and gets a little obscure at times, it's got the greatest first line in documentary history. And if you don't want to buy the Gun Crazy Blu-ray, what worked for years because kids would miss class is that some wily individual has posted the entire thing to YouTube, so you can watch it there. But it's a great documentary, and it's finally out in high def.
Part of me wonders sometimes if that has anything to do with my going to the theater less, is that all of these boutique labels are releasing such cool, obscure stuff that I've never seen and I'm excited to track down. And
because
I would...
clearly, if one has a choice between Rampage on the one hand and Orgy at Lil's Place on the other, that's a no-brainer.
Right. I can go see... I can't even, the Amy Schumer movie, I Feel Pretty.
Oh my God.
Or I can stay home and watch, you know, Severin's new 4K scan of Violence in a Women's Prison. And that's what I'm going to do.
I read a devastating critique of I Feel Pretty because even though it's about female empowerment and maybe us getting away from a certain standard of beauty, and I haven't seen it, apparently it's a 90-minute long commercial for certain products and specifically Target. So clearly the path to female empowerment is shopping at Target. Something about what you said. Oh, and I can anticipate if Orgy at Lil's Place becomes a thrills, chills, and spills column or, God forbid, a glutton for punishment column. This was a couple months ago. My lovely wife, who copy edits all of my work, said, I forget what film we were talking about. Is this one of the porny ones?
And that, you know, I love vinegar syndrome, but like
I thought that sounds.
I love the porny ones.
I love porn,
but I can really only, I really only check out maybe a third of what they put out because I'm just not into any of their porn stuff or even some of the softcore stuff. Like I'm more into sort of the horror and cult side of it, but not the porny side.
And what's interesting about that, although I have a normal male's interest in some of that stuff, I recently wrote a column about The Violent Years and Fugitive Girls, because they were both written by Ed Wood, and it seemed like Fugitive Girls was sort of a remake of that he had sold the same script twice. But that Vinegar Syndrome had unearthed the full-length porno theater version.
Oh, a Fugitive Girls?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't think that was a porny one.
Oh, it's a porny one.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And
I thought it,
the narrative is constantly interrupted. No, I believe they give you the option.
Okay.
And there might even be two discs. I don't remember. But you can watch the shorter exploitation one.
Right. Or that's what I want to see.
The one where every 10 minutes.
I have to fast forward a sex scene? Like,
well, there's one sex scene worth watching. Because in The Violent Years, there's a scene where a motorist is detained and taken off into the crops or the woods or whatever it is. And the assumption is the women are raping him. And on both films, the commentary track is by Frank Henenlotter and Rudolph Gray. Mm-hmm. And Frank Henenlotter thinks women raping a man is the funniest thing he's ever seen because he just keeps repeating, how could that happen? You can't force a man to get an erection. How on earth is that possible? In Fugitive Girls, we are sort of shown how that is possible.
Got it.
And that scene goes on forever.
That's a bummer.
Now, do you own Fugitive Girls?
I do not.
I own Fugitive Girls.
Okay.
And you can borrow it at any point and with your little remote.
Yes.
In fact, on the screen it says porny, not porny.
I want to see the exploitation movie. I don't need the porny stuff. Anyway.
I would also suggest that after 8 years, we change our name from F This Movie to Porny, not porny.
Thank you, guys. This is always a fun show to do, J-Bones. So thank you, and thank you all for listening. Happy birthday, us. Next time you hear from us, we will be more than 8 years old. And my, how we will have changed.
I'm this many. I get to choose my own adventure.
As always, find our website at fthismovie.com. We're on Twitter at FThisMovie, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, or you can email us at FThisMoviePodcast@gmail.com.
Also, I would like more Twitter followers.
Okay.
Because I would like to start posting more little jokes on Twitter. Okay. So, JBFThisMovie, follow me on Twitter, and you'll get a shiny new dime.
Yay! Anyway, thank you guys for listening. We will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.